Good evening and welcome to Alumni Talk at Tshwane FM 93.6. My name is Hlaolo V. Davids and I'm with none other than Malisele Hlakodi. She's back just after receiving her first qualification at the Tshwane University of Technology. Congratulations to her. She's now an official journalist and she's official in this show now. And yeah, I'm really happy to have her here as an alumni of the Tshwane University of Technology. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How does it feel to be a graduate of the Tshwane University of Technology?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's an honor to be a graduate in one of the first universities.
Yeah. I think there was a day I told you when there was an installation of the new chancellor.
Yeah.
I said, she will be conferring a new qualification to you soon. And here you are.
And she did.
You know, it's a Thursday, so it's that time again where we have to interview, you know, one of our alumni, the cream of the crop. Mm. That's what they call them. And today, our guest is Dr. Tribute Jabulile Mboweni, otherwise known as Tribute Bedi Mboweni. She was born and raised in South Africa in Bushbuck Ridge near the famous Kruger National Park, South Africa's first biggest national park. This is where everything that she has come to love and pursue passionately was cultivated. By everything, we mean her love for the environment, people and music. She holds 3 ecotourism management qualifications with the Tshwane University of Technology and a PhD from the University of Queensland in Australia. She's also a singer-songwriter. This is where Bedi, short for Songbed, comes from. In her last 7 years of pursuing music as a solo artist, rather, she has performed on some exciting stages inside and outside the African continent, including, not limited to, Atlantic Music Expo, Cabo Verde, the Cape Town International Jazz Festival in South Africa, and East African tour in Uganda, Tanzania, Kenya, and performances in France and Dubai, amongst others. But before we get to her, this is your favorite part where we follow alumni success stories. What do we have today?
Congratulations to postgraduate diploma in sport management alumni and HOD of sport at TUT Garankuwa campus, Dumisani Chauke, who was featured in an international book, Stories of Resilience Encourage Women Coaches from a Global Community by Sheila Robertson, which was launched in Canada last week, Wednesday. We also sent a congratulatory message to TUT journalism alumni and former Tshwane FM producer Rorisang Khosana, who has completed a Bachelor of Law cum laude with UNISA this week.
Amazing stuff.
This beautiful land, I never knew my existence is a thorn. Born in the dusty streets of this beautiful motherland, I never knew I'd have to fight for my place here. But here I am, trying to be, and even that is a struggle. my great-great-grandmothers have every right to be here.
Hashtag Help Yourself is a financial education program brought to you by FNB, a division of First Rand Bank Limited.
You know, graduation season has begun in TET. It started last week on Monday. You got yours on Wednesday, on the 10th of April.
On Thursday.
And it's a Thursday, on the 11th, rather, and, you know, just seeing you guys wearing your graduation regalia is just, you know, some amazing stuff. And today, when I look on my left, I see someone who has walked that journey with TUT and also abroad. It's amazing stuff. So we are going to learn a lot today. As mentioned, we are joined today by Dr. Tribute Jabulile Mboweni, otherwise known as Tribute Bedi Mboweni. She was born and raised in South Africa in Bush Park Ridge near the famous Kruger National Park. And I can also say I was born near the Kruger National Park as well, because I'm from Malamlele. So, just, you know, in the vicinity is right there. Feeling good. Everything's going well. So, Doc, welcome to Alumni Talk.
Thank you.
It's been a couple of weeks where we're trying to pursue you, you know.
Yes, it's we have been trying to make this conversation happen, and I'm glad I'm here finally.
Thank you so much for making time, you know, for us and to have this conversation with us. We call you as one of the cream of the top, of the crop, of the Tshwane University of Technology. The reason why I'm also saying this, you know, I've known you for a while, but not knowing that you are exactly here. I think at that time when I got to know you, you were completing your last qualification with the Tshwane University of Technology. But unfortunately, I was still a kid. I didn't understand, you know, the person I was going to, you know, one day meet. But today you are here and we really appreciate that. You know, we want to start this conversation, you know, about your journey with TUT. But you came here as a musician already in TUT. I would like to think, when I look at the year that you graduated, that was like in 2008. That was the year you completed your first qualification. Let's start there. Mm-hmm. And then you graduated in 2009 for ecotourism management, right? But you knew deep inside that you're a musician. You didn't come here to study something in the arts. You came here to study, you know, ecotourism.
Yes.
What sparked the interest?
I mean, everything that I do now, whether it's music or the work that I do with the human environment focused research, I grew up with. The seed was planted a long time ago. The music, I grew up in church. You know, I was raised in church. And so I started singing at a very young age. I was actually reminiscing about this with someone who really encouraged me to start singing when I was much, much younger, you know. And so when I came to study, I never really had an interest in studying music, per se. It was something that I actually really just loved. And I think around that time, we lived in Attridgeville, and I was, you know, even more active in, you know, in pursuing music, you know, whether it be, you know, the church, youth choir, and we also had a group called Pure Joy, you know, with a number of other ladies. And so I was really, you know, involved, but I never really wanted to study music. And I think even if I wanted to, it would not have been allowed, really. And we actually had this conversation with my parents, with my dad saying, because they had seen that interest and they had seen how involved I was at the time. And my dad said, you know, you are, you know, we need to sit down and help you decide what you're going to study. But the one thing we must make clear from the get-go is that you're not going to study music. You know, that didn't hurt, because really I never really wanted to study music. But also, I guess because I was young, I think I was about 16, 17 when I finished matric. And so my dad especially felt that I was too young to sort of decide on what to do. And so they tried to advise me, but in the end, I ended up studying ecotourism. That was not their first choice. It was never a choice of theirs, really, but it was a choice of mine, you know, because I had said, before we started staying in Pretoria, I had lived in Balfour, where I had studied tourism as a subject. Mm. But before that, having grown up in Bushbuck Ridge, having, you know, grown up, like you said, close to the Kruger, and having participated in a number of programs that had been put together by SANParks,
yeah,
in an effort to sort of integrate communities that had been formerly marginalized,
yeah,
from the SANParks, you know, conservation, mm, enterprise.
Yeah.
They had then started these programs under the social ecology unit. And so, okay, they had people in parks programs, you know, your kids in parks, Imbewu youth program, which then took groups of young people from school, certain schools, and, you know, took them to experience nature,
yeah, mm,
you know, so to speak. And so that interest, I mean, the seed had been planted for me,
yeah,
from that early age. And so it wasn't a difficult decision for me to make.
Mm.
I wanted to get into nature conservation.
Yeah.
I couldn't because we were a bit late,
yeah,
and so there was no space.
Mm.
And the next best thing was ecotourism, part of which involves, you know,
yeah,
subjects from the nature conservation,
yeah,
department. And so I wasn't lost.
Mm.
And so that's really how ecotourism, you know, happened. And because it was not an accident for me,
mm-hmm,
I really just pursued it,
yeah,
after
continued
that.
Continued with it.
Mm-hmm. I did my work integrated learning in the Cape,
mm,
and got a job on Dustin Island, lived, mm, there for a few years. And I really, really enjoyed being out there,
yeah,
and decided while I was out there that I wanted to do my
BTEC, yeah,
and then continue to do my master's, which was then a bit slightly different to the kind of work that I had been doing, the kind,
okay,
of field work that,
yeah,
I had been doing while working. But it's been an exciting journey. If,
yeah,
I could go back and do it again, I
definitely
would
do it.
Yeah, I would definitely, yeah, do it.
You came to TET just after the merger. The institution was just a baby learning how to run. How, mm-hmm, did you find it?
Oh, man. You know, it's interesting because when I came in here, I actually thought about how when I started, it was around that time,
yeah,
you know, just after the merger.
Yeah.
It was very different, you know, compared to how it is now. And I can say confidently that it is absolutely different because I have now come back, you know, I mean, I've come back so many times to study here, right?
Yeah.
But I've also come back to lecture and I've seen how much of a difference,
yeah,
you know, there is. There's more people who look like me, black people,
yeah,
black students who are accessing, you know, the institution now compared to when we started. I think in my first year there were about maybe 53, 54, 55 of us in the class,
mm-hmm,
and the majority were white students,
mm,
and we were the minority, you know, and now, you know, in the classes that I taught between 2017 and 2021, the majority were black students,
mm,
you know, and especially in the courses that I taught, especially in the department that I worked for, because historically we know the history of conservation in South Africa,
yeah,
highly dominated by old white males, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the difference is kind of stark,
mm,
now,
mm,
when you get into a classroom and your student list,
yeah,
it's all black students,
yeah,
you know. So there is really a big difference.
Yeah, no, that's amazing stuff. I'm glad that, you know, from 2006, 2005, was it 2005 or
2004? 2004 was my first year.
First year, just, mm-hmm, immediately. So actually, you were born with this university.
Yes, absolutely.
You're also celebrating 20 years of empowering people.
I was only yes, 4 years old, by the way.
You were 4 years old.
You were
old,
four. My goodness. Wow.
I was, what was I? I think it was like somewhere around 11.
Yeah.
I remember 2004, I was in grade 2.
Wow.
No, grade 2, grade 4, actually, mm-hmm, yeah.
This is amazing.
Grade 4, yeah. So,
this is absolutely amazing.
You know, so yeah, I can confidently say we are led. You mentioned being a lecturer, you know, for nature conservation. How did it feel, you know, to lecture that subject that you wanted to, you know, maybe to lecture in a department where you wanted to study?
It was great. It was great. I mean, that department raised us,
yeah,
you know, it raised me. I was so young when I got here, and so going back you know, as a lecturer. It really was amazing. And I remember on one of my first days, probably on my first official day of work, I came in and I came to the office, to the office that they'd allocated me.
Yeah.
And the person who sat next door in the next office, Dr. Panagos, who is now retired, you know, came to me and he said to me, you know, because I always called him Mr. Panagos. So when I came back, he was not a doctor yet. He was pursuing his doctorate.
Yeah.
And so I always referred to him as Mr. Panagos. And I remember him saying to me, we are colleagues now. You need to refer me. You need to call me by name. And I was like, I'm sorry, but that's not going to happen. You know, and because it felt like these are people who raised me. You know, I got here when I was so young and they taught us so much. And I was coming back now as their colleague. And it's really an amazing experience.
Amazing. You know, you're a lecturer, a musician at the same time. Was there ever a time where maybe you're in class and then some of your students get, can I have an autograph? Can I have an autograph?
Oh, you know, students. It used to happen. The thing that I decided I'm not going to do when I come back here to teach was I was not going to talk about my music, right, with my students especially. Because I know how quickly the lines can blur, right? When you're an artist, people feel like you belong to them, you know, and so they want to take a photo with you whenever they want to do whatever, you know, and that line needed to be, you know, that boundary needed to be solid between my students and I. So I never spoke to them about my music, but they found out, you know, and I remember sometimes, and I think they figured that I don't really like talking about it. So sometimes they would, I remember once after a lecture, as they were moving out of the lecture hall, one started singing one of my songs, you know. And I just kind of ignored it, you know. And there was one student who came to me, you know, he was like a mischievous student, you know, a last born kind of student.
Yeah.
He came to me once and he said, yeah, ma'am, because you're famous, you know, can I take a selfie with you? You know, and he was a well-meaning child. I mean, he used to perform very well in class, very interactive, you know. So I said to him, well, if you pass very well, I didn't tell him what very well means.
Yeah.
I said, if you pass very well, then I'll consider it, right? And so he comes to me after one of the tests, and he had passed, and he had passed really well. And I said, no, this is not good enough, you know. And he worked really, really hard after that, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's just those boundaries that needed to be maintained.
Yeah, amazing.
Now, we all know that academic work can get really hectic. Then how do you find a balance between your academic work as well as your music journey?
I think both my careers sort of feed each other. None of them are easy. You know, being a musician, if you listen to artists and the things that we talk about, and you realize that also is quite a challenging career. And so for me they sort of feed each other, you know. So when I'm frustrated with my academic work, I always find an outlet in the music. And when the music gets a bit frustrating, I always find solace in the academic work, because it involves a lot of writing, and writing, you know, is a good outlet also.
Amazing. You know, I was on Instagram this morning and I saw that in February this year, you were home and you spoke, you know, highly about this institution, about how it raised you. But I want to know from you, since while you hold TUT close to your heart, how did TUT empower you?
Oh, man, where do I even start? You know, I think, like I said earlier, I came here as a young woman, you know, very young. And I think this was probably my second year in the city. I didn't grow up in the city, you know. I grew up everywhere else but the city. And so coming here, meeting so many people from all over the country, even people from outside of the country, that on its own was quite empowering. You know, you get a glimpse of what the world looks like out there.
Yeah.
People share their stories and you get to have an idea of what's going on out there.
Yeah.
And Also, interacting with our lecturers, there's quite a number of lecturers who have now also become my friends, you know, because of that compassion with which they handled, you know, me and other students. And, I mean, TUT opened that door to the world for me in so many ways. I remember 2009... I started a project called Project 23, where we were doing environmental awareness programs in communities, planting trees, you know, in various communities around around Pretoria. And I think I had come for one of my BTEC weeks, and I saw a poster somewhere on campus, and they had advertised this competition where if you're doing something community related, you should enter the competition and you win a trip to Germany, you know, and stuff like that. And I took the information down and I, you know, I applied for it, and I got to be nominated as one of the two who left for Germany, right? And so after that, a lot of it, that's another way in which the institution inspired, you know, empowered
me. Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, that led to other things. I then got nominated for another trip to Canada the year after that, representing South Africa as the youth minister of environment, right? But I needed funding to do this. Guess who funded me?
TUT.
TUT funded me for that. You know, and I know that a number of people jumped through hoops to make that happen, including one of our former HODs, Mr. Botha, you know, and I think there was, at that time, I think it was the DVC, Mr. or Professor Prince Nebudalu, one of the people who made that happen, you know. So, and so many people have become what I now call my sponsors. You know, people who don't necessarily sponsor me in monies, but people who sponsor me with their words and you know, and mentioning me in rooms when I'm not around. One of those people is Dr. Nessa Mvuni, who is the Dean of Management Sciences. Dr. Pillay also is one of those people that I consider my, she's now the HOD of the Department of Nature Conservation. And so, you know, the empowering has not stopped for me from this institution.
It,
you know,
it continues.
It's ongoing. It's ongoing.
Amazing, amazing stuff. I don't know what to say, honestly. You know, it's one of those, you know, conversations, like what, that's why we call it, you know, alumni talk, engaging in conversations that are yet to be heard. You know, these are some of the conversations that people, maybe the information that people don't know, you know, about you and your journey in academics as well, and some of the things that you've already achieved. To this now, and I think before I get to this, I need to apologize first. I think when I sent an email at first, I addressed it nicely, like very well, because I was not really sure, is this PhD completed or not? Can I call a doc now or can I just like be safe? What do I do? I chose to be safe the first time. But then when we were interacting, I didn't draw in doc.
Oh,
and then I realized this morning, I was like, nah, man. There's something you've been doing wrong.
Oh no, it's not. It's there's nothing to apologize for. It's, I absolutely don't mind.
Yeah.
You know. And I think also, I did my PhD at an institution where I never even once called my supervisors doctor. You know, people are called by their names. You know, and so I think coming out, when I came back home, that's when people started referring to me as doctor. You know, and I mean, there's a lot we can say about that, right? But also, I think because I have so many names, it can be a bit, you don't know what to call me, really. So lately, well, my siblings, my younger brother calls me Dr. Stacey. you know, on Instagram, it's Dr. Brady. And it wasn't for a long time. But I've realized that now that I'm back home, it's important for people
to call,
you know, so...
Okay.
Yeah, so it really isn't, there's no problem there.
Let's talk about that PhD. You completed it with, you know, the University of Queensland. How was the journey? And, you know, I also want to understand why you decided to pursue it. there mm-hmm. in another continent. Mm-hmm. And while you're having a study that focuses on Mapungubwe mm-hmm. Cultural landscapes, tell us a little bit more about that. How did you get into that?
So, I 2017, I come back to TUT as a lecturer, right? When I come back to TUT, I already had a scholarship to do my PhD anywhere in South Africa, right? I had gotten this scholarship from a private company. Mm-hmm. And then when I start working here, I realize that because I work here, TUT can pay for my PhD, for my studies anywhere in this country, right? Mm-hmm. And so I call the company and I say to them, I now have this opportunity with this university, so I don't necessarily need this scholarship. Mm-hmm. So please extend it to someone who can use it.
Wow, very kind.
Because now I'm covered, right? Yeah. So I started working here at TUT, and I mentioned Dr. Nesamvuni before. Mm. We had worked with him on other, like the youth Y20, G20 youth programs for some years before with a number of others. Students from here who are now alumni, some even work here. Mm-hmm. And one day he says to me, he asks me what my plans are with regards to my PhD. And I tell him, I already have an idea of what I want to do. And he says, where do you want to do it? And I said, anywhere, really, anywhere in South Africa. And he says, would you consider doing it overseas? Mm. I'm like, yes, of course. If I had that opportunity, I would definitely consider doing it overseas.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking doing it overseas when I've just started here, maybe that just might not work, right?
Yeah.
And he says, no, I have a solution. Came up with a solution. There's a program that the university wanted to start with regards to empowering young African academics to to pursue their studies anywhere around the world. And there were already, others who were already on this path. And he said, The only condition is that you have to get yourself a scholarship. So you have to get the acceptance and you have to get yourself a scholarship because TUT will not be able to pay for you.
Mm.
That's what I did. I went out and I searched and I applied and I got approved. And then I applied for the scholarship and that also got approved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I left. How I chose the University of Queensland, I knew that I wanted to do a PhD in anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at a number of universities around the world that have good anthropology, departments.
Yeah, departments, yeah.
UQ was one of those that came up. There were others in Australia that I tried, and I spoke to potential supervisors. Mm-hmm. Some were retiring, so they wouldn't be able to take me on. And UQ came out, as the number one for me at that point. And Australia, for a number of reasons. Australia, one, because it's warm.
Yeah,
weather is pretty much... Brisbane, for example, the weather is just like Pretoria weather.
Okay.
So it was easy for me to go there because I don't like
home.
The cold. Yes,
yeah.
I don't like the cold. And so, and I found, people who really were working in that space, are working in that space that I wanted to get into. And so it was an easy choice for me to make.
Mm. Amazing.
What actually sparked the interest to conduct a study on the contemporary human land interactions in the Mapungubwe cultural landscape in SA?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Mm.
Like I said, I grew up near the Kruger, right? And in those times, in the early 90s, where organizations were transforming
mm-hmm.
or needed to transform because we're now in this democracy, right?
Mm.
South African National Parks was one of those that needed to transform. And so they started, like I said, the social ecology unit and started all these programs. And so my interest was sparked by that, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
So I end up working in these conservation areas. And I'm doing mostly field work, but there's something that I'm becoming a bit uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
I'm becoming uncomfortable with this concept of fencing in the plants and the animals and keeping people out,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
Because essentially conservation areas are framed like that, where people come in as tourists if they can afford to.
Yeah.
And so I'm becoming a bit uncomfortable with this, especially given the history of South Africa where people lived in these places and a lot of those communities were forcefully removed from these areas, and these places were now fenced off. And so when I did my master's, I looked at the cultural connections between people and nature. Nature in converted, you know, inverted commas. And so the cultural connections between people and rivers, right? And I did that in Barres, looking at people's connections with the Vaal River. And a lot of things came up, a lot of interesting things came up from that study. And so when I did my PhD, I sort of wanted to continue on that same path, but I wanted to take this work back to the conservation areas where this work had started for me, to sort of have, you know, bring up those questions. What, how do people interact with these places in post-apartheid South Africa? Are there any political factors that affect these interactions? And what does access look like for people in post-apartheid South Africa, especially, you know, African and indigenous communities? How do they interact with these places? And a lot of things came up. A lot of issues came up. Issues of land claims, post-apartheid land claims, issues of belonging, you know, with you know, communities talking about who belongs here and who doesn't belong here, and what sort of, you know, what stamps that, that belonging, what gives that right to belonging to a place, human, wildlife, you know, interactions and conflict and coexistence. And so there were a number of issues that were coming up, issues that are not normally, now they are discussed in conservation areas because you can't ignore them, right? But the thing about conservation is that it was sort of treated as, for a very long time, as an ivory tower of sorts, which is not affected by social issues. And I mean, South Africa is brewing with social issues, you know, and we can't ignore them. And so conservation areas are not exempt from those issues. And in post-apartheid South Africa, those issues are just there, and they really just have to be discussed. So this is how I ended up there. With regards to ending up doing the research in Mapungubwe, I had wanted to do the research in Kruger. It made sense for me to go back there because this is where it had started for me, right? But then I was talking to a friend of mine. I was like, this is what I want to do. And he said, can you visit, let's go and visit Mapungubwe. They were doing some work there, and I went along with them, and I saw the place, and I made an appointment with a person who was doing cultural heritage management there. And I asked them various questions, and I was like, I think this is the place. This is where I want to do my... This is the one, particularly because Mapungubwe is not just a national park. It's also a cultural heritage site. So I wanted to find out how it's like, what it looks like to manage a national park, a conservation area in post-apartheid South Africa that is also affected by all the cultural heritage things that come up, which is also a cultural heritage site.
Wow, amazing stuff. To this now, are you a TET alumni with a story to tell that would inspire a fellow alumni or students? Feel free to share with us your story, and we could feature you on social media platforms, TET website, our Bit newsletter, magazine, or alumni talk. Tell us about your career, the great things that you've accomplished since graduating at TET, or the technical you attended before the major. If you've published a book, started a business, or invented a product, we want to know all about it and how TET helped you to get there. Submit your story of 250 words or less, along with a high-resolution photo, to alumni at tet.ac.za. Don't forget to add the following information: your name, surname, graduation year, degree or diploma, cell phone number, and email address.
Tshwane FM is giving away 2 tickets for you and a partner to O-Ship 2024. That's right. Ready to set sail on the adventure of a lifetime. We're giving away tickets for 2 to the O-Ship 2024. Picture yourself abroad, a massive luxury cruise liner in the middle of the Indian Ocean, surrounded by music, excitement, and endless fun.
Fireball.
We are just not stopping at the grand prize. We are also bringing you a weekly dose of excitement with fantastic prizes up for grabs every single week, from luxurious beauty hampers and tickets to exciting sporting games. And here's the best part. Each weekly winner automatically qualifies for the grand prize draw. two tickets to the O-Ship 2024. To enter for a chance to win, all you have to do is participate in any interaction on our station by sending a WhatsApp voice note. Just make sure to end your message with a phrase, from Pitori to the world. So what are you waiting for? Share your thoughts, shout outs, or just say hi, and you could be sailing away to the party of a lifetime. From Pitori to the world.
This is Dr. Birdie, and you are listening to Alumni Talk on Tshwane FM 93.6.
Right. You know, this song reminds me of also my, you know, days as a young kid, you know, playing in the rain at deep rurals of Malamlele and Limpopo. And yes, I did get a beating, like you mentioned in your song. But that didn't stop me from playing in the rain. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you are here today to discuss all of that, to discuss your music with us. You know, we've, you know, spent the last 30 minutes covering your journey as an academic, the great things that you've done, the places that you travel to, really inspiring stuff. And, you know, I don't want to lie to you, like right now I really feel inspired and empowered, because, you know, the inspiration doesn't only come, it empowers you, it makes you want to be a better person, makes you want to grow as well. And right now, I think after this conversation, there's a lot of things that I'm taking and a lot of things that I'm going to live by, things that are going to allow me to pursue certain things. But right now we want to talk about your music journey. We have, I think, about 10 minutes to go for that. And yeah, let's get to your music journey. How did it start? Where did it begin? You mentioned church.
Yes.
So yeah, like, how did it start?
I grew up in church. We had a family church at home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, music is a central part of the church experience. Mm-hmm. And that's how it really started. And yeah, and as we moved around, because we did move around quite a lot, as we moved around, we were still immersed within church, and so more singing. And even when we moved to Pretoria, yeah, even more singing, you know. So that's really how it started for me. I think until 2011, late 2011, this was after sort of hijacking the COP, I think it was COP 17, or yeah, I can't even remember which COP it was, but it was in Durban. Mm-hmm. I sort of hijacked the stage there, and I ended up just singing.
Yeah.
And after that, I decided that I wanted to try and pursue music as a solo artist. Mm. And 2012 was when I just went for it. I just put myself out there, mainly because I knew that I needed more experience with being on stage, you know, with just performing as a solo, because I had performed with people for a long time, you know. And so that's really how it started. And that's when 2012 was when I met Dr. Sipho Stole, who is the founder of Native Rhythms, who I eventually signed with the company.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's also the company that released my debut album, as well as the deluxe edition of my debut album. Mm. And yeah, and so many things have happened since then.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up in the place that attracts tourists all the time. How did that impact on your musical journey?
I think because we left Bushbuck Ridge when I was 14, right? And so I don't think I was very, as much as we also did, you know, visit the Kruger. And so I was aware of, you know, that whole people do visit this place. At the time, because I was not really pursuing music much at that time, that touristic element didn't really have an influence in my music, really.
And it's actually funny that, you know, when you live close to a tourist attraction, you don't really pay attention to it because it's just right here.
For you, like, it's home.
Yeah.
You know, and so you don't really, you are sort of going about your own way and just doing your thing. And I think it's also the thing that used to come up a lot when I was doing the research in Mapungubwe. People talk about Mapungubwe as, you know, as this place that people go to visit as, you know, as tourists.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who live there and who have lived there for a long time, for them it's home.
It's home,
you know. And also how people speak about the place itself. People speak about nature, right? Visitors talk about nature, but people who live there talk about land and home, you know. So when you live in a place like that, you see it differently to how visitors see it, really.
Yeah. And you know why I said this? Because that's what happens with me. People will tell me, like, let's go to Kruger National Park. It's like, guys, like, it's right here. It's like 5 to 10 kilometers away from me. So, like, there's no need for me to go.
It's not an event for you.
Exactly. I just feel like I'll get bored when I get there, you know. But, you know, We also, you know, touching on the fact that you're doing music, it's not really influenced by the nature as well, the things that you've, grew up to, you know, just listening to the sound of birds, you've seen animals, hearing how they roar, some of them as well. But I think it's important that we look at some of the successes, you know, of your music. When did you first find success as a musician?
I think that's success is an interesting phenomenon, because what is success?
Yeah.
You know, and funny enough, there's a post I was following just this morning on Facebook where someone was talking about artists who make it, you know, and someone brought up the question of, you know, making it being subjective, you know, and I think success in many ways is also subjective.
Yeah.
I think for me, the most important thing, the thing that's always been important to me, is feeling like what I'm doing is meaningful to me and is fulfilling and leaves me content.
Yeah.
I think that's the personal success that I've, you know, that I think I am, that I'm pursuing.
Yeah.
You know, and so far I'm not doing bad. I'm not doing bad in doing things that I feel are meaningful for me and feeling content about those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You've performed in a lot of grand stages and countries. Which country or stage was your favorite to perform at?
I cannot give you one, but I can give you two.
Okay, two. That's good.
I can give you two. One, the Cape Town International Jazz Festival. Okay. One of my most favorite performances was there. It was, the whole experience was beautiful. It, you know, preparing for that experience was amazing. I've had the privilege of working with the most wonderful, you know, group of guys.
Yeah.
And I've sort of worked with the same people since I started performing. Mm-hmm. And we had an amazing time on that stage.
Yeah.
But also everything around the event was amazing. How we were treated, you know, everything was just really, really organized and everything worked according to time and no one was late and we were not late and everything kind of just worked. It was really, really just good and comfortable.
Yeah.
We came prepared and we found everything really prepared for us.
Yeah.
The Atlantic Music Expo in Cabo Verde, also one of my favorites. Beautiful, beautiful people, beautiful country. Also really properly organized and, you know, we didn't have to run around for anything. Everything was just set. Those are my two memorable
amazing
performances.
I still want to watch her perform. I think if we have an event somewhere around here, maybe Joburg. Mm. And Joburg is not one of my favorite places to travel to, though.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Pretoria.
It's easy. Just ask TUT to book me for one of the... I'm sure there's always some corporate thing going on here.
Golf day.
There we go.
Mombela Golf Day. 23rd of May.
There we go.
The 23rd of May, Mombela Golf Day. Let's see what happens in that, because I think that's the kind of music that they like playing around that, you know, during, you know, that festival, during the, what called as the gala dinner.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, let's see how it goes.
I'm here.
You are working on a project.
Mm-hmm.
80% of it was done in
Maputo.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why we're having this conversation today,
mm-hmm.
because you've been spending quite some time
there. I have been spending a lot of time in Maputo.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you are back here now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, you know, about this project. When can we expect it? Why is it done in Maputo?
Ha, interesting questions. The project is almost done. It, you know, it's a really special project for me. One, it's titled Matimu for Prince in Nature.
Yeah.
Right? Matimu means history.
History, yeah.
In the Xitsonga or Shangaan language.
You're
right?
Learning, right?
And the Footprints in Nature part comes from a bigger project that I'm doing this year, where I'm looking at hosting these dialogues with, you know, in collaboration with a brother of mine called Gogetso Sachani,
mm-hmm.
where we speak about the research in ways that are accessible to the public,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just academics, right?
Okay.
And so fusing that with the performance of my music from this next project.
Yeah.
The project really is, it covers my experiences of doing research in Mapungubwe, all those trips, you know, all the time that I spent there. And so it covers really, you will hear from the music when you listen to it, it covers, you know, themes that have to do with being out in within the environment and experience and having that experience. So, yeah.
Yeah.
When will it be ready? I am hoping to release the first single in August in honor of women.
Amazing.
Yes. The first single that is going to be released, God willing, will be a single that is a tribute to Manma Jakubomba, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a song that is a tribute to her.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the project will be released in September. Let's cross all our crossables that all of this, you remember what we spoke about earlier?
Yeah.
In life, you know, there is what happens and there is, all of those things. So hopefully this happens as we have planned it.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a project that you're working on with a friend of... When are you going to have these dialogues? And
I
would like to be invited.
You know what?
To come support our fellow alumni.
Maybe TUT can host one of those dialogues.
Yeah.
We are planning. There's a book festival that we have coming up in September, and so one of those dialogues will happen at that book festival, including the performance.
Mm.
But anywhere where we can be hosted and have, you know, and have these conversations would be great, really.
Amazing.
The Prestige Auditorium is a perfect place.
Yeah.
I think the big thing right now is raising funds to make those things happen,
mm.
because there are people who need to be involved, there are technicalities
mm.
that need to be taken care of, and so whoever is out there and is listening and wants to collaborate with us, please come through and we do the things.
Amazing stuff. Doctor, I'm gonna say it. Although you allow me to just call you Betty, but I'm just gonna call you Doc. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence, for making time for us, traveling all the way. You've been going up and down, working, but you still managed to spend, almost an hour with us. We really appreciate that, and we wish you all the best, and we would like to get involved in, your projects.
Mm-hmm.
Just let us know. You have my emails.
Yes.
And we'll be... we'll be more than willing to just like be part of those projects,
mm.
To write all about it, show TUT as a whole what, some of our alumni are doing, because that's the way to, inspire them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing these people that we've produced, we're talking about empowering people. Who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important. That's why we're having this conversation with you today, and we really appreciate everything. Is there anything else that is coming that we didn't really cover?
No, not so much. People can just follow me on social media. Anything else that comes up, I will post over there. But I must just say thank you both for having me.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure. It's always a pleasure coming back to TUT.
Yeah.
This place has shaped my life, for the better. And I'm always, always happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Last thing that I'm going to say, I love your website. It's very beautiful.
Oh, you and the music too. Don't be shy to say it.
I've spoken about the music. I mean, since 2016, I've been jamming since 2016. Magumedo was the first song that introduced me to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been listening to that song, but somehow Fulayana has replaced that song in my heart. I think I hold that one daily in my heart. So thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me.
And from us, it's a wrap.
Discount Supermarket gives you more. When you buy Goldie Mix Chicken Portions 5kg for only R189.99, Sanfoil or Best Cook Sunflower Oil 2 litre for only R56.99 each. Never pay more than the Boxer price.
Listen to Twana FM live on our mobile app, available on all digital stores. Hashtag from Pidori to the world.